This is Women's Health Today, about women for everyone. How does being a woman determine your health and well-being? Does health and other policy adequately address systemic problems and root causes of ill health? Women's Health Today looks at health from a women-centered perspective, examining the biological, psychological, environmental, and social factors affecting the health and well-being of women and families. I'm your host, Giovanna Rossi. I want to let listeners know that beginning in July, the name of the show is changing to Well Woman Radio. I'll still focus on the health and well-being of women and girls, with a special emphasis on the social determinants of women's health and wellness. Today, we have a special show focused on celebrating fathers and exploring the role of women's health in the lives of boys and men. My guests include Dr. Laura Markham, clinical psychologist turned parenting coach and author of Peaceful Parent, Happy Kids, How to Stop Yelling and Start Connecting, as well as public health expert, father and grandfather, Enrique Cardiel. Stay tuned for Women's Health Today, next. Dr. Laura Markham is a clinical psychologist turned parenting coach, author of Peaceful Parents, Happy Kids, How to Stop Yelling and Start Connecting, and creator of ahaparenting.com. Welcome to the program, Dr. Markham.
Thank you so much, Giovanna.
In one of your blog posts, you say that one of the most important factors in girls' academic achievement is their father's expectations. And specifically, the quote I want to read for our listeners is, "Children whose fathers are highly involved with them in a positive way do better in school, demonstrate better psychological well-being and lower levels of delinquency, and ultimately attain higher levels of education and economic self-sufficiency." Since we're celebrating dads today in honor of Father's Day, can you, Dr. Markham, talk about the role of a father, the role a father has in a child's life, and in particular, the impact he has on his daughter's health and life?
Okay. Well, the quote that you just read is just one of many studies cited in that post about the importance of dads. And that was a study that looked at girls and their relationship with their dad, and actually really all children and their relationship with their dad. And so we see some differences in the role of a father for boys and for girls. But in general, what we see is that when a father is involved in his children's life, when he spends time with them, when he is nurturing to them, when he really likes who they are and wants to be with them and listens to them and talks with them, takes an interest in them, those kids do better in every way. So for girls specifically, one of the things that we see is that the boys she chooses later in life will to some degree resemble her dad. So if she has a dad who's always at work and never there for her, she may well marry a guy like that. If she has a dad who puts her down, she may well marry a guy like that. If she has a dad who hits her, she may well marry a dad like that. Obviously, those are not good outcomes. But if she has a dad who believes in her and respects her and thinks that she can do anything, she may well go out with guys like that, and there's a greater likelihood that she will. And so she'll have better relationships with men for the rest of her life.
Okay, and what about families that don't have a traditional father role, either by choice or by circumstance? Some of the examples you gave would do, but other examples might be same-sex couples mm-hmm. who have a child, or simply someone who was brought up just with the absence of a father altogether.
Right. Well, we know that what matters most to children is parents who love them and are really there for them, that they feel they can completely trust their parent, tell them anything, and their parent's going to be in their corner and on their side and there to help them. So that can be, of course, a parent of either gender. And the research that's been done on gay couples raising kids is still pretty preliminary, but so far the results are that there's no difference in gay couples raising children and straight couples raising children. So when I say fathers are important, if there's no man in the life of a girl, let's say that two women are raising her, does that mean that she herself will not date men? No, the research does not show that, because gender orientation turns out to be genetic. It turns out to almost certainly not have a lot to do with the way you grow up. So I don't think that matters. I think what we would see in a girl raised in a lesbian family who is straight herself and does date men, I think we'd probably see her dating guys who are like her family, with whom she feels comfortable, that it feels like her tribe. So if one of her moms played basketball with her, or one of her moms, you know, was more of an intellectual with her, you know, she might enjoy those things with a guy that she's with later. So I don't know that it has to be a man, but we do know that girls who have fathers in their lives do pick men like those fathers. So it might just be that when you grow up with a certain kind of man around you, you think that's what it is to be a man. And when you get ready to pick a man, you pick a man more like that.
Since we're celebrating Father's Day today on the show, we are talking a lot about men and fathers. And later in the show, we're going to talk about women's health and men and what that connection is. But Dr. Markham, I wanted to ask you, what matters most in fathering? You've talked a little bit about that already, but can you go into that a little bit more, especially from your own parenting coach philosophy as well?
Okay. Well, I did talk about parenting in general and what children need. I think fathering is a young child's first association with what it means to be a man. So I think we're a little confused in our society about what it means to be a man right now. There was a time when men were, you know, the strong, silent type, and I think now we want men to be more open and nurturing and warm and emotionally intelligent. And yet we still want men to be strong and the provider or a provider for the family, and we want men to be able to protect their families. So I think those things can all be true. I think the question for every man who is a father is, what do I want my children to think a man is like? What's a man? And I think every man will answer that differently. But I'm hoping that we can find a way to model for our children that men are both strong and tender at the same time.
Hmm. And you do coaching and parenting, and you have a blog in which you post things about a relationship-based model of parenting. Can you explain what that is?
Sure. We think of parenting as being, you know, of course, the physical things, putting food on the table and getting our kids bathed and into bed at night. But also, really, most of what we think of as parenting is about correcting our kids. It's about, no, 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 you can't throw your food across the room. You can't hit your brother. You can't run in the street. You have to do your homework. You have to brush your teeth. You know, say that nicely. Don't speak to me in that tone of voice. And so that kind of correcting is what we think of as parenting. And in fact, when you put a camera in a home and you watch parents with their children, most of what parents say to their children comes out of their mouth as a correction. But actually, what we've learned through the research is that children are much more open to our guidance if they feel connected to us.
Mm.
So really, 90% of parenting needs to be about connection. Once kids feel connected to us, they want to follow our guidance. But until they have that connection, our guidance often falls on deaf ears, and kids don't want to follow it. Sometimes they actively rebel. Sometimes they ignore us. Sometimes we have to say it over and over. But the more connected kids are to us, the more tuned in they are to us, and the more they want to follow our guidance. So that would be a relationship-based model of parenting. And there's a lot of research on different aspects of this. Some of it started in World War II, when children were actually taken away from their parents in England and sent out into the countryside to protect them. And John Bowlby, who's considered the father of attachment theory, began to study what was happening to these children, and children who were separated from their parents in various ways during the war, and how it impacted their psyches and made it impossible for them to be close to other people until this could be healed, the rupture with the parent. So attachment theory is certainly part of what I'm describing, but it goes much further than attachment theory, I think.
Mm. So I'd like to go into this a little bit more, because I love the idea that you're presenting, that children need to be connected with rather than corrected all the time and punished. Can you break that down and give us two or three things that parents and fathers who are listening today and mothers can do to make that happen? It sort of sounds good in theory, but how do you actually do that?
Great question. Yes, I'll give you three things. You know, all of us feel we have a good relationship with our children. We know we adore them, even when we get angry and lose our tempers and yell at them. But for kids, when they feel yelled at or corrected, or when something happens and they get upset, they feel disconnected from us. So in a way, life happens. It gets in the way of connection. So it's our job as the parent to reach out and reconnect with our child every single day. And in fact, I say start first thing in the morning, you'll have a lot better day. So when your child wakes up in the morning, spend a few minutes cuddling. If every dad could spend a few minutes cuddling with each child every morning, it would change his relationship with his children, and it would make his children so much more cooperative with him when it comes time to, you know, when he's saying, come on, get your shoes on, where's your backpack, right? Because they would feel connected. And it helps them sort of make the transition into the world where they have to put on their thinking brains instead of just their feeling brains because they just woke up. So that would be one very simple thing parents can do, every parent. Another thing is empathy as your go-to response to everything your child does. And by empathy, I don't mean analyzing your child or telling them what they're feeling. I mean seeing it from your child's point of view. So your son says to you, I don't want to go on the field trip. Instead of saying, of course you do, you say, you don't want to go on the field trip? You're curious. You don't have to get big, you know, invested in and say, well, you have to go on the field trip, son. You can just say, you don't want to go? What's up? And then maybe he'll say, well, last time I threw up on the school bus on the way to the field trip. Or when we're on the field trip, I always have to sit with this kid I don't like because he's alphabetically next to me. Or I get a little scared being on the bus or whatever, you know. And if the dad can listen to what his child has to say, he can sometimes help him problem solve, which I know most guys like to do. Most moms like to do it, too, help kids problem solve. But sometimes kids can even come up with their own solution if we just listen. But most important, even if there's no solution, the child will feel connected to dad and will feel like, I can always go to dad with a problem. Dad always understands. So even if it's something like your daughter is belligerent, your daughter is defiant, and she says, no, I won't. He can stop, dad can stop, take a deep breath to calm himself down and say, you really don't want to, huh? I hear you. But, sweetie, you have to. That's just the way it is. We have to wear shoes when we leave the house to go to school. It's the way life is. Come on, let me see those cute little toes. I think they're asking to be kissed. I think they've run out of kisses again. No, they're saying, where are my sneakers? Where are my sneakers? So playfulness would be a third thing that I would say. We started with seeing it from your child's point of view, and now I'm segueing into playfulness as another way to connect with kids. No child can refuse an invitation to play. It's their natural language. It's a way that humans connect. And in fact, when kids get laughing and giggling, oxytocin is released in their system. It's a bonding hormone. So they feel closer to dad and therefore more likely to cooperate with him. And if you're laughing too, you're going to feel that oxytocin too, which is a good thing for you. It makes everybody's day brighter to feel those warm, fuzzy hormones that are about connection. And I'm going to add a fourth one very quickly, if I may.
Sure.
Special time. So I used to call this quality time, but I've converted to calling it special time, which Patty Whiffler of Hand in Hand Parenting came up with the name special time. I say call it by your child's name. That's the most special name there is. So if your son's name is Josh, it's Josh time. This is Daddy and Josh time. What can we do? I'm all yours for 15 minutes. I'm going to set the timer. I'm putting down my phone. I'm not going to pay attention to anything else. You know, your mom has the baby, or even if it's a single dad spending time with his kids, that he, you know, maybe the baby's down for a nap, or maybe there's a babysitter for one of the kids at a time on a weekend if dad's got the kids and he's a single dad. So basically, time for dad to just pour his love into Josh and do whatever Josh wants him to do. And if Josh is a toddler, Josh doesn't have any ideas maybe about what to do, he can chase Josh around the house until Josh is squealing with laughter. Just being scary enough as Daddy Monster to get Josh squealing, just a little bit of fear there, but not so much fear that Josh gets serious and is really scared, obviously, or crying, because when kids laugh, they also release anxiety. Anxiety is just another word for fear, right? So kids get a little bit scared, and they release their anxiety by laughing and giggling, squealing with laughter. And what happens is, after they've done that, they feel so much better, more relaxed, less rigid, less demanding, more cooperative. They even get along with their siblings better, and they feel more connected to dad.
And so it's like a cycle. If you can get them to release the anxiety, they can be ready for the connection that you're offering in the first tip that you gave us. Okay, and this idea of being present is really resonates. And you often quote the Dalai Lama in your work. Why is his message so important in your work? And can you talk about that?
Yes. You know, parents think that to correct their children, they have to be mean about it. They think they have to raise their voice to get their child's attention. It's exactly the opposite. When you raise your voice, you train your child not to pay attention until you raise your voice. But parents think they have to actually be punitive. It's a pretty bleak view of human nature, actually, to think we have to be punitive to get our children or any human to act with goodness. In fact, people act with goodness more when they're treated with goodness. So I say to parents, of course you have to set limits. You're a parent. Your child is young. They came into the world needing your guidance. No, they can't, you know, run in the street, throw their food, hit their brother. But that doesn't mean you have to be mean about it. What the Dalai Lama said is, be kind whenever possible. It is always possible. And I really think it is always possible. We can say to our children, oh, sweetie, you wish you didn't have to stop playing and come in the house to get ready for bed. I hear you. When you get older, I bet you'll play all night, every night. You'll never go to bed, huh? When you say something like that to a kid, they're so much happier and more cooperative coming in the house with you. They will do what you ask if you stay in their face in a friendly way. But when you come down like a sledgehammer, they rebel. If not then, later, they will rebel. So it's not just that it's a more humane way to be with children. It actually is the way that protects your relationship with your child so they want to cooperate with you. And so that you'll have a child in the teen years who actually comes to you with problems and who is much less likely to lie to you.
Well, Dr. Markham, thank you so much for being on the show today. It's been really nice talking with you.
It's been a pleasure, Giovanna. Thank you for having me. And happy Father's Day, everybody.
That's right. Happy Father's Day for everybody, all the listeners out there. Dr. Laura Markham is a clinical psychologist and parenting coach, author of Peaceful Parent, Happy Kids, and creator of ahaparenting.com. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
If you just joined us, you're listening to Women's Health Today, a show about women for everyone. I'm your host, Giovanna Rossi, and today on the show, we are celebrating fathers and exploring the role of women's health in the lives of boys and men. Next, I spoke with Enrique Cardiel, public health expert, father, and grandfather. Enrique is an urban health extension coordinator and the facilitator of the International District Healthy Communities Coalition. Welcome to the program, Enrique.
Thank you, Giovanna. I appreciate being here.
Okay, you have a quote on your signature line in your email from the 2005 Bangkok Charter for Health Promotion in a Globalized World, which says, I'm going to read the quote for our listeners, "Health promotion is the process of enabling people to increase control over their health and its determinants, and thereby improve their health." Can you first talk about what these determinants are and how do the social determinants of women's health impact men's health and lives?
Sure. And I think, first of all, it's important that I just say that I do health promotion for Bernalillo County, but I'm not speaking on behalf of the county or county government or any positions.
Sure.
The determinants of health are the things beyond our individual selves that impact our health. So housing impacts our health. Income distribution, various hierarchies that we have within society, obviously clean air, clean water, public transportation, and some of the things people don't like to talk about are things such as sexism, racism, homophobia, classism, and other issues that really impact our day-to-day lives. And so all of those things interact and create health. And if we look, there's a distribution of health, much like we can map out a distribution of income. You could look at health and see that there's a distribution that fairly closely follows along with the distribution of income and power in society.
You're a dad and a granddad. And today we're celebrating Father's Day, so happy Father's Day to you.
Well, thank you.
And I wanted to ask you, what, in your opinion, can listeners do, either, you know, dads or moms, to promote their health in their community?
Well, on a community level, what we have to do is look at a concept within public health called social inclusion, right? There's the concept of social exclusion, and the positive of that is including people. So that means sharing more responsibility, sharing more power, sharing more of the things that impact our health, including caring and affection. You know, that often, especially in the last few decades, right, we've had created a society where people are suspect, and so people touch each other less, people hug each other less. We have this created this distance in order for people to feel safe. And on some level, there's some reason, you know, to be aware of that, but we've also kind of overplayed that to the point where people don't get enough just basic human contact with each other. And we know that in society there's a disproportionate amount of power towards men. There's a disproportionate amount of income that goes towards men, with the income gap between women and men. Mm. And the expectations that women are the ones that provide human caretaking and not giving men that opportunity negatively impacts everybody.
So how do we give men that opportunity or encourage men to take that opportunity? And that goes also to your comment about sharing power. So how do the people in power share that power?
Well, it comes from an internal consciousness. I mean, I grew up in this society as a male, so I carry with me all the fun sexist stuff that comes with that. So it's up to me to look at opportunities to share power, to treat people better, to not take on that role of keeping power to myself, but instead of looking for ways to share with people. So simple things like just asking for input, simple things like following women's lead, simple things like not interrupting women when they're speaking, as well as the more of what overt things that we're concerned about, you know, don't rape people, don't hit people, those kind of things. But simple things as well as just respecting women as human beings. And that, you know, working at that within a family structure as well, or within a relationship structure as well, is important.
That takes a conscious, intentional effort to do. What motivates you to do that? It's hard work.
It is. And I don't know where the initial spark was. I think just in my realizing how racism, colonization, classism impacted me in my life, I think at some point I just came to an awareness that I need to extend that out to people who are seen as less than me within this social structure that we have set up, where there's this hierarchy of what's normal and what's optimal and what's not. And so really the ending of sexism is really incumbent upon men to not just be morally supportive, but to be active and to take some leadership in trying to end that and to promote women's health. Right. The fact that we know a lot more about men's heart attacks than women's heart attacks is one example of how we have left women behind in a way that's really bad. Women live longer than men in general, but they also live with disabilities much longer than men do. So you have a longer life as a woman, more than likely, but you also have the higher chance of living a lower quality of life for a long period.
Good example. When we're talking about power and hierarchy, it makes me think of our theme today on the show, which is fathers and children. So There's often a power issue or a hierarchy within the family, you know, with dads being more powerful than the kid. And I just spoke with Dr. Laura Markham, who's a parenting coach, and her philosophy of parenting is relationship-based parenting, which means connecting with the child and not punishing the child. What do you think of that, and how do you do parenting, effective parenting and grandfathering as well?
Well, in theory, you look to reduce or eliminate the punitive part of that role and encourage the positive reinforcement part. In real day-to-day life, when you're rushing to your job and those kind of things, those things sometimes slip, but to keep kind of trying to go back and look at how do we encourage our young people to develop as full human beings, regardless of their body parts or their gender role or gender identity, that we look for opportunities to support them being who they are, which means we have to challenge a lot of the judgmentalism we were indoctrinated with as children towards what's normal, what's not normal, what our limitations are, and those kind of things. I think our mental boxes of what are people supposed to be like based on who they are and who they came from really are sometimes as big a barrier as the actual structures that are out there.
Okay, and we're almost out of time, but I wanted to ask you, what would you like to say to fathers who may be listening today? Is there anything else that you wanted to share?
Well, I think as a spouse as well as a parent and grandparent, I think just treat the people around you well, and they will treat you well. And, you know, there is a training that we have towards being very authoritarian as fathers. But I think really loving and caring the people around us, whether they're our genetic family or a family of choice, is really where we build a healthy community for ourselves. So making sure that the women around us are thriving and having a healthy life will create better opportunities for us to thrive and have healthy lives as fathers and spouses and partners and grandfathers.
Okay, thank you, Enrique Cardiel. That's all we have time for today. I'd like to thank you for being on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate the chance to come and sit with you for a few minutes.
Great. I'd like to thank my guests, Enrique Cardiel and Dr. Laura Markham. For more information and links, go to collectiveactionstrategies.com. Join me every second Friday of the month and mark your calendar for July 12th for the same great show with a new name, Well Woman Radio. This has been Women's Health Today. Women's Health Today is produced at the studios at KUNM in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Our engineer today was Ramon Garcia. Theme music composed and performed by Paul Presley. You can find a podcast of the show at prx.org. I'm Giovanna Rossi for Women's Health Today.